Masterpiece, formerly known as Masterpiece Theater, is the longest-running weekly primetime drama series on American television.
It's aired hit shows like Sherlock, Prime Suspect, and most recently the runaway hit, Downton Abbey.
Our guest now is the woman behind the powerhouse that is Masterpiece. Rebecca Eaton has been the executive producer of Masterpiece for 28 of its 42 years. And awards on her watch include 43 Primetime Emmys, 15 Peabody Awards, 2 Golden Globes, and 2 Academy Award nominations. Her memoir came out yesterday, and it's called Making Masterpiece. Rebecca, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here, or almost there.
How does it feel to hear something like that, that Masterpiece is the longest-running weekly primetime drama series on television? Do you ever think you'd hear that when you first started?
I certainly didn't. Makes me feel old. That's how it makes me feel. Masterpiece was 15 years old when I started producing it, 27 or 28 years ago. And I have to say, it was huge then. And I thought that I was going to be the captain of the ship for a while. And my main intention was not to be the captain on whose watch the ship went down. So I was a huge fan. I loved Alistair Cook. I had just finished watching The Jewel and the Crown, which was on the season before I joined. But if anybody had said, you're going to be doing this job for 27, 28 years, and at the end of that time, Masterpiece Theater will no longer be called Masterpiece Theater. It will be Masterpiece, and it will have the highest rated drama of its history on the air, I would have fallen off the chair.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible journey. You know, one of the things that surprised me when I picked up the book was I expected you to be British. And you're American, as we are probably well aware. What do you think? What was it like, you know, running TV shows from Britain to the United States? What was that experience like?
It is funny. People do think that I'm a little old British lady. And I was born in California. No, I wasn't. I was born in Boston. But I grew up in California. And I spent my childhood going to the movies and reading British books. I was an Anglophile. And then I went to the East Coast. My family were from the East Coast. And then I ended up working at the BBC in London. I write all this story in the book, so, you know, I don't want to give it all away. But I had a whole other career before I came on to Masterpiece. I was in my late 30s when I started Masterpiece. And it was a dream job because I loved this stuff. And to have the chance to be Alistair Cook's boss and to meet all these actors and to go to London, one of my favorite cities in the world, 2 or 3 times a year with a big bag of money and buy programs, was a dream come true. And it really has remained a dream.
Why do you think they picked an American woman to do this job?
The executive producers have always been American. The show was created in Boston at WGBH, the public television station in Boston that brought you Julia Child way back in the early days of PBS, and Nova, Frontline, American Experience, Antiques Roadshow, Zoom. And the people running GBH back in the day realized that this would be, there was a lot of really good British drama, and they got some money from Mobil Corporation and started buying the rights to air the British drama here. So there always was an American producer, and I think that's pretty important because my job is to represent the American sensibility and to judge what I think Americans would want to see, because there's a lot of British programming we don't buy, that you don't see a Masterpiece, because it might not work as well. American audiences might not be as interested or get it, because it can be about what's going on in England now, which is different from what's going on in this country.
Well, you tell a lot of marvelous stories in your book. One of them is what it was like for you to meet Alistair Cook for the first time when you took over the reins. What was that like?
It was very scary. It was very scary because I idealized him. And he he was very well known then. He was, I don't know, 70 years old. He had a huge career as a journalist. He'd been on TV in a series called Alan Cook's America. He did Omnibus, which is an arts program. So he was very well known, and he had a way of meeting people because people would fawn over him, and he was very brisk and polite, but not particularly warm or engaging. So I was shaking in my boots when I met him, and particularly because I was being introduced to him as his future boss. But over the years, we developed a real friendship. We worked well together. I think he grew to respect me, to listen to my thoughts on his scripts, and we shared a deep, deep interest in British actors and dramas. And he used to call me up at home in the evening. He would never say, "Oh, Rebecca, this is Alistair." He would call up and he would say, "Well, what was the name of that actor in The Charmer? The one in the scene in the second series?" And so I would come up with the name. He said, right. Thanks. Bye-bye. Not even, how are you?
He was right in the middle of the conversation already.
He was.
Well, one of the interesting facets about your book, this is a thread running throughout, is the role that ExxonMobil played in Masterpiece and Masterpiece Theater. It was interesting to learn that they kind of bought into it in the first place because someone convinced them that the country club set needed something to talk about the next day.
Yeah.
And that was where all that money came from initially. How influential was ExxonMobil in the early days?
Oh, hugely, hugely. They, in the book, I kind of tell the story of, or try to tell the story of whose idea it was, who had the idea of creating Masterpiece Theater. And I discovered two or three or four people would happily take the credit for it. And so I kind of pieced together the chain of events. And I think it definitely was somebody at WGBH in Boston who recognized that there was so much good British programming, then went around to a lot of corporations to ask for underwriting. And that's how public television programs were largely funded and continue to be largely funded. And nobody bit. None of the major U.S. corporations, got it or understood. And then they went to Herb Schmertz, the legendary vice president at Mobile Corporation, and he instantly understood that if he gave not terribly much money to WGBH, it wasn't going to cost the earth, that WGBH could then buy the rights to these programs, put together a series called Masterpiece, and it would make Mobil Oil look really classy. It would make people want, as they were, when their tanks were running low, that, well, maybe instead of Chevron or Gulf, maybe I'll pull into the Mobil station. They do that show, that Masterpiece Theater show. It also helped in Washington because Mobil Oil was a giant multinational and very important for the influential in Washington to look fondly on Mobil and to see that they were doing good. So it was a brilliant PR move, and Mobil then proceeded to pour money into Masterpiece Theater for the next 25 years to the tune of over $250 million they gave to us to then give to the production companies and the broadcasters in England who are making the shows. And they also paid Mobil in that money was advertising and marketing money.
Well, we're talking.
They were sort of like the Medici's, in Italy. They really supported the arts.
Well, we're talking right now with Rebecca Eaton, executive producer of Masterpiece. Her memoir came out yesterday. It's called Making Masterpiece.
You can join in. Do you have a favorite show, a favorite memory from Masterpiece or from the Masterpiece Theater days? Today, are you a big Downton Abbey or Sherlock fan? Or do you like the mystery series? I liked I, Claudius. I looked it up. That was a Masterpiece Theater one back in the day. Call in if you want to share a show. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. 1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And we're back with Rebecca Eaton, executive producer of Masterpiece Theater. That's what it used to be called. Now it's just called Masterpiece. Her memoir is just out, and it's called Making Masterpiece. And we want to listen to a clip of one of the biggest hits from Masterpiece. This is Downton Abbey.
I nearly came down in a dinner jacket tonight.
Really? But why not a dressing gown? Or better still, pajamas?
That's why I didn't.
I like the new fashions. Shorter skirts, looser cuts. The old clothes were all very well if one spent the day on a chaise longue. But if one wants to get anything done, the new clothes are much better.
Yeah, I'll stick to the chaise longue.
But Connie, you don't really want things to go back to the way they were, surely?
Of course I do, and as quickly as possible.
What about you, Papa?
Before the war, I believed my life had value. I suppose I should like to feel that again.
Ah, clip from Downton Abbey. I love Maggie Smith in that. She's so dry and hilarious. What is it like overseeing, you know, this huge runaway hit in America? I understand it's not quite as popular in England, but here in America, it's going gangbusters.
Oh,
how does that feel?
It's huge in England. No, no, make no mistake. It is huge in England. It's the most popular drama show they have this year and any of the years it's been on. No, I don't oversee it. I have to be very clear. This is made in England. Downton Abbey is completely filmed there. We are the American partners, but we are very much partners at a distance who made sure it would show up on PBS and make sure people know when it's coming. But
well, you're sort of its ambassador here in America.
Yes, I'm the closest thing that anybody can get to in America. Ian Fellows is the creator of Downton Abbey. He writes every word. He has written every word of four seasons, and our season four will debut on January 5th, Sunday night at 9 o'clock, and he is already working on season five. The shows are filmed from February, March, to about July. It takes that long to make the 10 and a half hours of Downton. And then, of course, they have to be edited, but it's a huge cast. There are 20 main characters. I was just listening to that clip, and besides Maggie's wonderful voice, there's poor Sybil. That's Sybil, the middle daughter, the youngest daughter, who sadly died last season. She has a lovely husky voice. And this season is 6 months after the unfortunate end of last season, the very last episode. Of course, Lady Mary's husband, Matthew, died an untimely death in a car accident. So this year, the family is in mourning, and it is time for Mary to begin to come back to the world, and she can't. She's having trouble. So that's where the story opens, and I can't possibly tell you anything else about the plot.
Well, we can wait. We're counting the moments. Let's take a phone call now. We have Bill on the line from Madison. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
And thank you very much for your service in raising the cultural bar in America. Masterpiece has been a big part of my life, I think, since its beginning, and I'm very grateful for that experience, and it's a step beyond any other television content that's out there. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. That's very, very kind of you. I take that seriously. Since writing this book, I've been going around and, you know, doing book signings. And people come up to get a book signed, and they just look at me and say similar things, that they remember watching this with their family. They're so grateful that when there was nothing else on television, they could find something good on Masterpiece. So I'm very proud and grateful for that contribution.
Now, it sounds like with Downton Abbey, it was something you weren't immediately sold on. You sort of thought, been there, done that.
Well, I didn't think that so much. I write about that in the book a little bit. The thing was, it was pitched to us at a time when we had a very full plate on Masterpiece, and we were to do the new Upstairs Downstairs. So it's similar, of course. Julian Fellows had done Gosford Park, which became Downton Abbey, and Gosford Park is similar. It's an upstairs-downstairs story, the movie Gosford Park, for which he won an Oscar, actually. And so we were about to revisit the Bellamy family, house in Eaton Square, which is upstairs, downstairs. So we were doing that, and we had done other similar big house stories. So I thought, this sounds good, but we have a full plate, and we're already doing mm-hmm. a similar thing. So I passed on it. And then I had the immense good fortune that a lot of other American television executives passed, and eventually it did come back to us.
Now, it did come back to you, and that was fortunate because of the huge hit that it is and the excellent program that it is. What about things that got away? Do you have regrets?
Ah! Do you think I'm really going to tell? Well, I do. For some reason, writing this book, I decided I had to come clean about all the mistakes I'd made as well. And I did make a rather giant mistake when the BBC proposed that we remake Pride and Prejudice. That was 10 or 15 years ago. And I thought, well, we already did Pride and Prejudice once. And then I think it was in the 70s, the late 70s. Do we really need to do another one? So I passed on it. And then they cast Colin Firth. And then my luck ran out. I couldn't get it back. And it turned out to be a huge hit. But there is a little bit of a silver lining in that everybody thinks it was on Masterpiece. I get lots of compliments. It was actually on another network, who I won't name. But people think it was Masterpiece. So I thank them and smile. I guess it was virtually on Masterpiece.
Well, we can't end there. You missed out on that one. A few words, if you would, about Sherlock, another one of the great successes of Masterpiece.
Yes. Well, Sherlock is coming back for the third season this January, January 19th. We are going to air it at 10 o'clock at night, immediately following Downton Abbey.
Wow. Oh, it's going to be a big night.
It's going to be a huge night for 3 weeks, brand new, and they are better than ever. Benedict Cumberbatch is at the top of his game.
And we're about out of time. Got a minute here. I wonder how much Masterpiece has thought about attracting a younger audience and what it's doing with sort of online and social media.
Oh, yeah. Well, we did a sort of a major redo of the brand in 2008, and one of the things we realized is that we really needed to get younger people aware of us, because when they would see the shows, they would love them. But they said, well, can't devote 10 Sunday nights for a series. But now, with social media, with streaming, with making these things available in all sorts of different ways, we are bringing in younger people, particularly for Downton Abbey and for Sherlock. And we loved having them, and we want them to stick around and see the other titles once they have, you know, drunk the Kool-Aid of Downton Abbey and Sherlock. And we want them to stick around and see what else we have. Mr. Selfridge, for instance, with Jeremy Piven, which follows Downton Abbey in February.
I'm sorry, what was that one?
It's called Mr. Selfridge. It actually starts in March. It follows Downton Abbey and Sherlock. And Jeremy Piven from Entourage stars as the owner, manager of the first department store in London.
Excellent. Well, we'll be looking forward for that one. Rebecca, thank you so much for your time today.
Great. Fun to talk.
We've been talking to Rebecca Eaton, executive producer of Masterpiece. Her memoir is out yesterday, and it's called Making Masterpiece.
A couple more plugs from our callers. Julie in Barron County says, Eight Wives of Henry VIII, Nancy and Sheldon, A Town Like Alice. Thanks to you for your calls. More coming up here on Central Time on the Ideas Network.